Hello, I'm Joan Beaucaire of Theocracy Watch, a project of the Center for Religion, Ethics, and Social Policy at Cornell University. Today's date is October 6, 2004. The late Rusus Rushduni had a vision for the United States and the world that was very extreme. He dreamed of reconstructing American society to become like the Old Testament. Rushduni founded the Christian Reconstruction Movement to establish Old Testament biblical law as the standard for society. Rushduni wrote in his book, The Independent Republic, in 1964, quote, Christianity and democracy are inevitably enemies. In a later book, Institutes for Biblical Law, Rushduni calls on Christ's elect people, as he refers to them, to, quote, subdue all things and all nations to Christ and his law word. Rushduni advocates the death penalty for anyone who sins against the Ten Commandments. That includes blasphemers, adulterers, and disobedient children. Rushduni is so extreme that many people monitoring the religious right don't take him or the Christian Reconstruction Movement seriously. Rushduni's son-in-law, Gary North, is founder of the Institute for Christian Economics and a prolific Christian Reconstruction writer. He said, around the time of Rushduni's death, Rushduni's writings are the source of many of the core ideas of the new Christian right's political activism. Well, Rob Boston is Gary North's polar opposite. He writes for Church and State magazine, a publication of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. But Boston said something very similar to Gary North in the October 2001 issue of Church and State. Quote, although Reconstructionism may seem so far out as to be easily dismissed, the philosophy has in fact provided the intellectual basis for much of the religious right's thinking and political activism. Stripped of its more extreme features, watered-down versions of Reconstructionism are the driving force behind groups like the Christian Coalition. End of quote from Rob Boston. I'll give you an example of how a core value of Christian Reconstruction ideology can become government policy. Marvin Olasky is an elder in the Redeemer Presbyterian Church, a church that embraces a Christian Reconstruction worldview. Olasky was an advisor to former Governor Bush of Texas. He published a book in 2000 called Compassionate Conservatism, and George Bush wrote the foreword. The book provides the philosophical foundation for the president's faith-based initiative today. The book is simply written and very moving. Olasky takes his son Daniel on a trip to the most impoverished places in the country, and they meet those unsung heroes who have dedicated their lives to helping the most destitute of people. You feel reading the book that Olasky is a very special person, warm, caring, and personable, and also a great father. It's important to keep in mind that followers of Christian Reconstructionism are not bad people. There are many kind, caring, decent people who believe deeply in what they're doing. They just believe that the world will be a better place when everyone believes the way they do. In his book, Olasky doesn't see any problem with the government funding charities that proselytize. He's not concerned about poor, vulnerable people having to embrace a certain faith in order to receive help. Well, what would a Christian reconstructed society look like? Professor William Martin, chair of the Department of Sociology at Rice University, envisioned just such a society. His conclusions are based on interviews he conducted with more than 100 leaders of the religious right, including many Christian Reconstructionists. William Martin published a book, which became a documentary for PBS called With God on Our Side. He explained that the federal government would recede into the background, and churches would assume responsibility for welfare and education. Also, the U.S. Constitution would conform to biblical law. There's a lot more to their agenda, but those are the areas we're going to focus on in this talk. But in addition, they would relegate women to a subservient role. They oppose any form of gun control. Notice that an extension of the ban on assault weapons was never even brought to the floor for a vote. The movement also fiercely opposes regulations on business, regulations that protect the environment, worker safety, and public health, and they advocate more frequent use of the death penalty. However, in this talk, we're going to focus on these areas: the federal government receding into the background, churches assuming responsibility for welfare and education, and biblical law. First, I'm going to introduce the term dominion theology. Author Kevin Phillips, in his book American Dynasty, points out that two of the president's spiritual advisors are adherents of dominion theology. They are the Reverends Jack Hayford and Anthony T. Evans. Phillips uses the word dominion theology interchangeably with Christian Reconstructionism, but I'm going to use the term as referring to what Rob Boston calls a watered-down form of Christian Reconstructionism. Dominion theology is not based in any particular religious denomination. Its followers come from all denominations or non-denominational churches. It's a belief that Christians have a holy responsibility, a mandate, a commission to take dominion over the world. And the term dominion means control over, in this case, control over all the democratic institutions that govern our country. A definition of dominionism from the Disinfopedia on the web, quote, "Christians are mandated to gradually occupy all secular institutions until Christ returns." Well, I began to get interested in dominion theology when I read a book called America's Providential History by Mark Belisle and Stephen McDowell. It's a popular textbook in Christian schools and the Christian homeschool movement and teaches history from the perspective of dominion theology. America's Providential History views the world from a biblical worldview. The most powerful legislator in Congress, Tom DeLay, Republican of Texas, and House Majority Leader, shares that biblical worldview. He said at a worldview weekend gathering, "He," meaning God, "is using me all the time, everywhere, to stand up for a biblical worldview in everything that I do and everywhere I am. He is training me." End of quote. Our aim, according to television preacher Pat Robertson speaking at a banquet in 1984, our aim is to gain dominion over society. I happened to be on a speaking tour of Iowa in 1986 when I received a memo from Robertson's political organization. The first sentence read, quote, "Rule the world for God." Well, there's dominion theology in a nutshell: rule the world for God. A dominionist organization based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the National Reform Association, states in their purpose and mission statement, 1, Jesus Christ is Lord in all aspects of life, including civil government. 2, the civil ruler is to be a servant of God. He derives his authority from God. This mission statement is based on Romans in the New Testament, 13:1-4. Quote, "It," meaning government, "is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil." When reading the Bible, you can pick and choose which passages to emphasize, and that will influence your worldview. This passage from Romans emphasizes God the Avenger. The New York Times published an article showing two contrasting images of Christ. One is the gentle, loving Christ painted in 1941, and he's contrasted with Christ the Avenger painted this year, 2004. The Christ of dominion theology is Christ the Avenger. The Reverend Tim LaHaye, known as co-author of the best-selling Left Behind series, has played a major role in politicizing dominionism. The latest book in his series, Glorious Appearing, features Christ the Avenger. Glorious Appearing describes that moment when Christ returns to earth and he shares no mercy for non-believers, that is, people who don't share LaHaye's beliefs. LaHaye's Christ does horrible things to non-believers. I mean, their eyes melt out, their flesh boils. When you read it, it sounds a lot like the effects of a nuclear war. Jerry Falwell wrote in his book, Nuclear War and the Second Coming of Jesus Christ, that nuclear war is a hopeful event. After that final battle of Armageddon, Christ returns and, just like in LaHaye's portrayal, non-believers experience his wrath. Quote, "He will crush them beneath his thumb." End of quote. Non-believers experience his wrath. Quote, "He will crush them beneath his thumb," Falwell writes. In May of 2002, an article appeared in First Things, a journal of religion and public life, that talks about the role of government as God's avenger. Quote, government derives its moral authority from God. It is the minister of God, with powers to avenge, to execute wrath, including even wrath by the sword. Who was the author of that article? Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. This article was about the death penalty. Scalia wrote, quote, indeed, it seems to me that the more Christian a country is, the less likely it is to regard the death penalty as immoral. Dominion theologians emphasize the Gospel of Matthew from the New Testament, where Christ tells his disciples, go therefore and make disciples of all the nations. This section of Matthew is called the Great Commission. The Great Commission has come up in speeches to audiences who appreciate its significance, such as the Religious Broadcasters Association. Here's a quote from a speech to that group. Broadcasting is more than a job for you. It is a Great Commission. That speech was made by our president. When speaking to cardinals, bishops, and Catholic leaders in the East Room of the White House, he said, all of you are part of the Great Commission. George Grant is a Dominionist author and educator. He was executive director of Coral Ridge Ministries for many years. He wrote in The Changing of the Guard, Biblical Principles for Political Action, quote, Christians have an obligation, a mandate, a commission, a holy responsibility to reclaim the land for Jesus Christ, to have dominion in civil structures just as in every other aspect of life and godliness. It is dominion we are after, not just a voice. It is dominion we are after, not just influence. It is dominion we are after, not just equal time. It is dominion we are after, world conquest. That's what Christ has commissioned us to accomplish. There's a major roadblock for those wanting to take dominion over the U.S. government. That's the U.S. Constitution. The man considered to be father of the Constitution, James Madison, wrote, strongly guarded is the separation between religion and government in the Constitution of the United States. Another founding father, Thomas Jefferson, went on to become this country's third president. He used the metaphor wall of separation between church and state to explain the meaning of the First Amendment. In order for dominionists to fulfill their great commission, Jefferson's wall must come down, and they're working hard at it. There have been some outrageous bills introduced into Congress this past year, but the Constitution Restoration Act takes the prize. It was introduced in both houses of Congress on February 11, 2004. The Constitution Restoration Act includes the acknowledgement of God as the sovereign source of law. This is important because God is never mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. The framers of the Constitution wrote a secular document, or a godless constitution, as scholars call it. So the acknowledgement that God is the sovereign source of law is a big departure from the intentions of our founding fathers. The Constitution Restoration Act threatens with impeachment and conviction any judge who dares to uphold church-state separation. This has to be one of the most shocking pieces of legislation introduced in a long time. The bill has 39 co-sponsors, and they represent the true hardcore dominionists in Congress. One of the Senate co-sponsors of the bill is Zell Miller, Democrat of Georgia. You may remember Zell Miller as the Democrat who spoke at the Republican convention. Yes, some Democrats in Congress are dominionists, but let's keep a sense of perspective. If you analyze the voting records of members of Congress by dominionist-leaning organizations, if you look at the voting records those organizations give members of Congress, Republicans overwhelmingly vote for dominionist legislation, and Democrats overwhelmingly oppose it. I'll give you an example based on scorecards produced by the Eagle Forum, an organization founded by Phyllis Schlafly. The following scores rate members of the Senate in the year 2003. A score of 100% means the senator voted with the Eagle Forum 100% of the time. 36 Republicans and one Democrat received scorecards of 100% from the Eagle Forum. That one Democrat was Zell Miller. A score of zero means they never voted with the Eagle Forum. 39 Democrats and no Republicans received ratings of zero. The other 25 senators are somewhere in between. I'll repeat those numbers. 36 Republicans and one Democrat, Zell Miller, received scores of 100%, and 39 Democrats and no Republican received scores of 0. Those numbers represent a highly polarized Senate. They also reflect a highly polarized society. And the polarization is not between rich and poor, nor is it between religious and non-religious. It's between those who support a separation of church and state and those who don't. Many religious leaders strongly support a separation of church and state. The schism in this country is between those who support the secular constitution that the framers gave us and those who are trying to write God into it. The schism is between those who support tolerance and a diversity of beliefs and those who believe there's only one truth and they have a mandate to impose that truth on the rest of the country. And the schism exists among people of faith, even within the same denominations. The Texas Republican Party platform offers us a clear articulation of one side of the schism, so we'll be quoting from it during this talk. From the preamble, the Republican Party of Texas affirms that the United States is a Christian nation. This belief in a Christian nation violates the principle of separation of church and state, so Dominionists are calling it a myth. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay said at a congressional luncheon in 2001, "I don't believe there is a separation of church and state." Supreme Court Justice Scalia attacked the principle at a Religious Freedom Day rally. And from the Texas GOP platform, our party pledges to exert its influence to dispel the myth of the separation of church and state. Dominionists seek to dismantle the federal government. That goal is not original, but historically, efforts to dismantle the federal government have not succeeded. Dominionists differ from those who have made efforts in the past because, as part of dismantling the federal government, they want to transfer much of the responsibility to churches. The Texas GOP party calls for downsizing the federal government on page 19 of their platform. Quote, "We support the abolition of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Office of the Surgeon General, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Departments of Energy, Housing and Urban Development, Health and Human Services, Education, Commerce, and Labor. We also call for the defunding or abolition of the National Endowment for the Arts and the Public Broadcasting System." Two departments due for the chopping block are Housing and Urban Development and Health and Human Services. These two agencies provide critical services for the poor. If these two departments are abolished, who will help those least able to help themselves? According to America's providential history, Scripture makes it clear that God is the provider, not the state. The book is describing President Bush's faith-based initiative. God is the provider, not the state. Not only is President Bush shifting the responsibility for welfare to religious institutions, he's also shifting the responsibility for education by fighting for school vouchers. Vouchers use taxpayer dollars to fund religious schools' tuition. Jerry Falwell wrote around the time the Moral Majority was forming, quote, "I hope to live to see the day when we won't have any public schools. The churches will have taken them over again, and Christians will be running them." This quote comes from his book, America Can Be Saved. From the Texas Republican Party platform, page 15, "We call for the abolition of the U.S. Department of Education and the prohibition of the transfer of any of its functions to any other federal agency." That's pretty strong language. Not only would the Department of Education be abolished, but its functions cannot be transferred to any other agency. Now we're going to discuss the primary tool for dismantling the federal government, tax cuts. As everyone knows, tax cuts are one of Bush's signature issues. Some economists believe the tax cuts have stimulated the economy, and maybe that's what they're really about, but it's curious that these tax cuts are so important at a time when our country is fighting not only one, but two expensive wars, and experiencing record deficits. And it's especially curious that the president has been trying to make them permanent. Let's look at what America's providential history says about taxes. It claims that most taxes are unbiblical. Income tax is idolatry, property tax is theft, and inheritance taxes are simply not allowed in the Bible. Well, the Texas Republican Party doesn't just want tax cuts. On page 17, it urges the IRS be abolished. Dennis Hastert, Republican of Illinois and Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, just published an autobiography in which he, too, advocates abolishing the IRS. America's providential history claims that the most biblical tax is a flat tax, where everyone pays the same percentage of their income in taxes, placing the greatest burden on the poor. House Speaker Dennis Hastert is calling for a flat tax. The Texas GOP platform calls for eliminating the income tax, inheritance tax, gift tax, capital gains tax, corporate income tax, payroll tax, and property tax. You notice what's missing? A sales tax. And America's providential history does not single out sales tax as unbiblical. Do you think it's coincidence that the Speaker of the House is calling for a national sales tax? Such a tax, again, places the greatest burden on the poor. It also burdens our cities and counties, which rely heavily on that tax. Not only is the Speaker of the House calling for a national sales tax, at a campaign stop in Florida, President Bush said, quote, abolishing the U.S. income tax system and replacing it with a national sales tax was an idea worth considering. Next, we're going to talk about biblical law, which is at the heart of dominion theology. Justice James Leon Holmes was appointed to a federal court in Arkansas on July 6, 2004. He wrote for an Arkansas publication, quote, Christianity transcends the political order and cannot be subordinated to the political order. This gets to the heart of biblical law. The Bible has supremacy over the Constitution. This view of the law has an interesting take on women, often quoted as a passage from Ephesians 22:23 of the New Testament. Wives, submit to your own husband as to the Lord, for the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is head of the church. According to biblical law, then, the woman should be subordinate to man. Justice Holmes wrote, the woman is to place herself under the authority of the man. Dominionists view homosexuality as a criminal activity. From the Texas GOP platform, page 10, we oppose the legalization of sodomy. The key words here are oppose and legalization. This movement does not want to just ban gay marriage. They want to make gay relationships illegal. In other words, homosexuality should be a crime. Senator Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania, told an Associated Press reporter his views on homosexuality and the law. Santorum is a rising star in his party. He's only in his second term, yet he's risen to the number three spot in the Republican Party. It's a meteoric rise. Senator Santorum, talking about the Texas anti-sodomy laws, which the Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional in June of 2003, said, if the Supreme Court says you have the right to consensual sex in your own home, then you have the right to bigamy, you have the right to polygamy, you have the right to incest, you have the right to adultery. Well, if homosexuals and adulterers don't have the right to consensual sex in their own homes, as Santorum says, then they're criminals. Criminals go to prison. In this interview, Santorum sounds like a Christian Reconstructionist, wanting to criminalize both homosexuality and adultery. There is nothing in the U.S. Constitution about adultery, yet President Clinton was impeached. He was charged for lying under oath, but the impeachment proceedings began 7 months before he even testified. President Clinton's impeachment was not about lying under oath. It was about enforcing biblical law. Most disturbing about Clinton's impeachment was that only 5 Republicans in the House voted against it. There are many more than 5 moderate Republicans in the House. The Ten Commandments are at the foundation of biblical law. That's why there's a crusade taking place in this country to place the Ten Commandments in public buildings. Placing the Ten Commandments in public buildings has great symbolic importance. It represents the supremacy of the Bible over the Constitution. William Pryor, a recess appointment to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, said at a Save the Commandments rally, "God has chosen through His Son Jesus Christ this time and this place for all Christians to save our country and save our courts." You notice where he's speaking, at a rally to save the Ten Commandments. A 2,581-pound monument of the Ten Commandments was placed in the lobby of the Alabama Supreme Court. The federal courts ruled that the monument violated the principle of separation of church and state and ordered it removed. John Hostetler, Republican from Indiana, authored an amendment that ruled that no federal dollars could be used to remove the Ten Commandments monument from the Alabama Supreme Court. The bill was meaningless in one sense. The monument was removed, but it was a way of affirming biblical law. The Hostetler Amendment passed, it actually passed, on July 23, 2003, by a vote of 260 to 161. While the media was feasting on the Ten Commandments monument, the real news was the Hostetler Amendment that 260 members of the House actually voted for it. These numbers are not trivial. This vote demonstrates the dominionism in the House of Representatives goes far beyond the most visible leaders, such as Tom DeLay, and it goes beyond the President of the United States. This vote doesn't mean 260 members of the House are dominionists. They probably don't even know what that term means. But it does demonstrate the ability of dominionist legislators to win support for their bills. This same congressman, John Hostetler, got another bill passed. A year later, almost to the day, he authored the Marriage Protection Act, which passed the House this past summer on July 22nd by a vote of 233 to 194. The bill would block federal courts from considering constitutional issues arising from gay marriage cases. To put it simply, the bill would deny access to the courts over gay marriage. This is very significant, a bill that would actually deny a group of people access to the courts. I'll give you a breakdown of this vote by party. There are a total of 434 members of the House, 228 Republicans, 205 Democrats, and one independent who votes with the Democrats. Those who voted for the bill, 209 Republicans, 24 Democrats. Those who voted against the bill, 15 Republicans, 179 Democrats, including the independent. 8 members didn't vote. A yay vote for this bill is not simply about one's feelings about gay marriage. It's about a group of people imposing their biblical worldview on the rest of the country. Whether or not those who voted for the bill are followers of dominion theology, they caved in to the pressure from those who are putting this country on the road to dominion. And a government run on the principles of dominion theology would not tolerate other belief systems because there is only one truth. There is no room for the kind of tolerance and diversity that makes our country a great nation. So how did we get here? We're going to begin this history in 1964, the year Barry Goldwater lost his bid for president on the Republican ticket. And Barry Goldwater has nothing to do with the religious right. He's just your good old-fashioned conservative. He's been very outspoken against religious extremism taking over the Republican Party. But a group of Republican strategists who had worked on Goldwater's 1964 campaign decided they needed to expand the base of the Republican Party, which was too narrow. The party represented primarily the very wealthy and the Southern segregationists. One of the people who had worked on Goldwater's campaign was Republican strategist Paul Weyrich. In 1973, he founded the Heritage Foundation, a think tank to promote the ideas of this new movement. Weyrich wanted to expand the base of the Republican Party, so he proposed targeting members of fundamentalist, Pentecostal, and charismatic churches. Not all members of these churches support Dominionism, and probably haven't even heard of it, but those were the groups targeted by the political strategists. In 1979, Weyrich coined the term Moral Majority, which became a major organization with Jerry Falwell at the helm. The Moral Majority registered 3 million new voters to the Republican Party in 1980, which is curious, because many of those voters don't match the socioeconomic profile of Republicans. People tend to vote their socioeconomic interests. So how do you get people to vote against their own interests? Weyrich said in a speech in 1980, "We are talking about Christianizing America. We are talking about simply spreading the gospel in a political context." Those two sentences are the seeds of Dominionism, Christianizing America in a political context. Fast forward to this year's presidential election. A flyer claims that if people vote Democrat, the Bible will be banned. Or if people don't vote, the Bible will be banned. I guess the assumption is that the churches in which these flyers are being passed out are already Republican. They just need to get out and vote. That flyer wasn't sent out by some fringe group. It was sent out by the Republican National Committee. Back to our history. The Moral Majority disbanded in 1989, the same year the Christian Coalition formed. And this brings us to Pat Robertson, founder of the Christian Coalition. You may remember that Pat Robertson ran for president in 1988 in the Republican primaries. He lost, but he beat Vice President George Bush. That is the father, in the Iowa caucuses. How did he do that? He decided to take over the Republican Party from the bottom up. His organization worked precinct by precinct to take over the party leadership at the local level. Christian Coalition's executive director, Ralph Reed, said, quote, "We think the Lord is going to give us this nation back one precinct at a time, one neighborhood at a time, and one state at a time." One of their tactics was to tie up meetings for hours until people left. Traditional Republicans got tired and went home. Once people left, Robertson's supporters appointed themselves leaders and made key decisions. Since this method worked so well in Iowa, the Christian Coalition used the same tactic in several other states in the early 90s. Republican state party platforms began to get pretty interesting in 1992. The Republican Party of Washington State in 92 outlawed witchcraft and yoga classes. Robertson said to the Denver Post in 92, "We want, as soon as possible, to see a majority of the Republican Party in the hands of pro-family Christians." To get their candidates elected, Reed and Robertson taught them to use stealth, avoid publicity, stay out of debates, work below the radar screen. Don't do anything to call attention to yourself. Reed said to the Los Angeles Times in 92, "It's like guerrilla warfare. It's better to move quietly with stealth under the cover of night." While their candidates stayed out of the limelight, Christian Coalition campaigned on their behalf exclusively in fundamentalist, Pentecostal, and charismatic churches. They passed out voter guides in those churches and use church telephone directories for get-out-the-vote drives. The guides are very skewed and distorted, but have the appearance of neutrality. Christian Coalition field director Bill Thompson said at a recent meeting, "The guides are our greatest weapon. It is the best weapon in our arsenal. It is our B-2 bomber." By election time in 1994, Christian Coalition had distributed 40 million voter guides in more than 100,000 churches nationwide. 1994 was a watershed year in this country. That year, Republicans won majorities in both houses of Congress for the first time in 40 years. Time magazine credited the Christian Coalition with giving the Republicans these successes and called Ralph Reed, quote, "the right hand of God." In 2000, 70 million voter guides were sent out to support George Bush. Where is Ralph Reed today? He is a regional director of the Bush-Cheney campaign, using the same tactics he did as director of Christian Coalition. According to the Atlantic Monthly, in April, Reed has moved from doing God's work to doing George W. Bush's. Ralph Reed said that he received his political training at the meetings of an organization called the Council for National Policy. ABC News reported on the council with the headline, "Vast Right-Wing Cabal, Meet the Most Powerful Group You've Never Heard Of." That's because the council's been meeting in strict secrecy since 1983. The Reverend Tim LaHaye founded the Council for National Policy. His idea was to bring together hardcore religious leaders with far-right politicians such as Jesse Helms and Washington insiders like Paul Weyrich. He also included the biggest financial backers of extreme right-wing causes. These people would plan and carry out the political strategies of the Dominionist movement in their three times a year secretive meetings that have been going on since 1983. Some of the 500 or so members include the people I've been talking about in this presentation. Members of the council include the late Russus Rushduni, father of the Christian Reconstruction Movement, Representative Tom DeLay, Republican strategist Paul Weyrich, the Reverend Tim LaHaye, political consultant Ralph Reed, and television preachers Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Quote, "These are the genuine leaders of the Republican Party," Barry Lynn told the New York Times. Barry Lynn is executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. George W. Bush kicked off his candidacy for president in 1999 by meeting with the Council for National Policy. They must have decided he was one of them, because leaders like Robertson and Falwell marshaled massive resources to support him. Bush met privately with the council again this summer, just before the Republican convention, and again, the two leaders are supporting him with great enthusiasm. Falwell told a recent meeting of the Christian Coalition that their movement now controls completely the Republican Party. Pat Robertson based his work on two words, voter apathy. He wrote in 1990 in his book, The Millennium, "With the apathy that exists today, a well-organized minority can influence the selection of candidates to an astonishing degree." Voter apathy has worked well for Pat Robertson and for the Dominionists, but that is changing now. According to the New York Times, there's a surge of political activism among young voters, and I have to add that I also am seeing this. Something else that's worked well for Dominionists is voter ignorance. The media, even the liberal press, has had a real blind spot to the rise of Dominionism in government, but that may be changing now. There are many wonderful organizations working to wake up the public to extremism and intolerance in government, and those organizations deserve to be supported. I'll mention just a few, and they're all easy to find on the web. Americans United for Separation of Church and State is very important. And they publish Church and State magazine, which gives information you may not find anywhere else. Everyone should subscribe. People for the American Way is a very big organization that combats extremism and intolerance. The Interfaith Alliance is a clergy-led organization. And then there's a very small volunteer organization that's discovered it's possible to reach millions of people thanks to communications technology. And that is Theocracy Watch. We are reframing the public debate. Our power lies in the fact that we're providing a framework that makes sense out of the world around us. Our website is heavily visited, and our DVD is getting passed around and sent all over the country. DVDs and CDs are powerful tools. So you can find us on the web. Just type in Theocracy Watch. And the title is Rise of the Religious Right in the Republican Party. I'm convinced that most people would not support a Dominionist agenda if they understood it. Their candidates have to use stealth, and their chosen political party had to parade moderates, none of whom hold a major position in the Bush administration, in front of the camera during their national convention. I believe the majority of people in this country value its diversity and will make good political choices when they are informed. That's why Theocracy Watch is working so hard to reach as many people as we can with this information. We'll conclude with a letter Thomas Jefferson wrote when he was President of the United States to explain the meaning of the First Amendment. Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, I contemplate with solemn reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state. Thank you very much.